April showers may bring May flowers, but they do not bring good news for the world of outdoor athletic events. This is especially true in a place like our beloved Houston, Texas, where every rainstorm is a torrential downpour that leaves the entire city underwater, even if it only rained for like 10 minutes. More than one Rice University sporting event fell victim to Mother Nature last weekend, and unfortunately for the Owl faithful, the baseball game was not one of them. That's enough meteorology for now. Let's get back on our wheelhouse, rolling the music, and talking some ball.
This is K-True on 96.1 KTRU LP Houston and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1 FM, the Rice University student-run radio show where we break down everything happening in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM and stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, make sure and follow us at ktru.sports on Instagram and at KTRU Sports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and we don't want you to miss out. If you have a question for us, you can DM us on either platform or drop a note to ktrusports@gmail.com. That's ktrusports@gmail.com, all lowercase. We want to know what you want to know, and we want to talk about it on the air. Throughout the next hour, you will be hearing from a team of student hosts. I'll be getting us started with our first segment, Around the Hedges. This is how we kick off every show here at Rice University. It is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges, so we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments of the past week from both Rice and the city of Houston. One more quick shout that I forgot before we get into our hedges for the week. We are going to be in the Rice Thresher. That's our university student newspaper. When they release their next issue on Wednesday, there will be our sports article featuring our show and kind of giving us a little more news coverage. So make sure to look out for that. If you are a fan of the show, might get a good look into a few things that are going on behind the scenes. We're excited for everyone to see that. Let's get into our sports for the week. We're going to start off with both tennis teams. We've had some good stuff going on both sides. The men's tennis team beat Charlotte 5-2 on Friday, April 4th. That was a hot second ago, but we haven't talked about tennis in a couple weeks. They then lost to UTSA on the following Sunday, just 4-3. And they are now 12-9 on the season, 3-3 in the conference, and ranked 72nd in the country. They have one more regular season match. That is this coming Sunday. They will be at Birmingham playing the UAB Blazers. That's on 2 p.m. The women's team has been doing even better. They beat South Florida 4-0 last Friday. They beat FIU 4-3 the following day. And then on Tuesday, they came back home and beat number 49 Wichita State 4-0. With FIU and Wichita State both being ranked, they got they are now up to 6 ranked wins on the season in 20 matches. In those 20 matches, they are 15-5, 4-0 in the American Athletic Conference. They are ranked 43rd. In the country, according to the ITA. Their final regular season match is Saturday, just a few hours after this airs at 11 a.m. Central, versus the Blue Raiders of Middle Tennessee State. Both tennis teams will be in action again before we talk to you with the kickoff of the American Athletic Conference Championships. Those start Thursday, April 17th, and run all the way through next weekend. So our next episode will air kind of during that multi-day tournament. That tournament will be played in Memphis. We will update you if anything exciting has happened, especially the week after. We'll make sure to update you how the Owls did in their conference championships. The women especially, I think, could make some noise the way they've been tearing through the Americans. So keep your eye out if you're a Rice tennis fan. Moving over to track, we shouted out the Tom Tella's invite at UH as their next action. And the Owls did not disappoint. On the men's side, Juan Marias beat his previous PR on the discus with a throw of 58.28 meters, which moves him from 5th to 4th all-time for Rice men's discus throwers. That throw is ranked 2nd in the AAC and 10th in the West region of the NCAA. Augustus Henry threw a javelin 65.4 meters, which ranks 6th all-time at Rice and is good for 3rd in the conference. On the women's side, Julia Johannes Dottier had several strong showings. She finished 3rd in the 100-meter hurdles, which is with the time that's good for 5th all-time at Rice and 6th in the long jumps. Sania Friendly finished 4th in the 100 meters with an 11.67. She is ranked 5th in the AAC now. However, The aforementioned weather caused several field events and almost all the running events not to take place as they were scheduled on Saturday, April 5th. If you were in Houston on Saturday, April 5th, you know that there was some weather. The biggest event, however, that was affected by the weather on Saturday, April 5th in Houston was our beloved Beer Bike. The Thresher headline about Beer Bike was "All Beer, No Bike." The alumni races were completed, and one of the two women's college undergraduate heats were completed before the race was called off after a long lightning delay and then just canceled for the day. So only one of the two women's heats and neither men's heat was able to be completed. There were rumors, nothing will be confirmed or denied by the show on the air, of a clandestine beer bike that was scheduled for the following Tuesday at 6 a.m. was allegedly organized by a few bike teams who wanted to just get the race in when everyone was able to go out there. Word got out. Basically, everyone on campus knew about it. I don't think it was as secretive as it was originally intended. It would have been done pretty unofficially with no EMS security staff, anything. The university administration shut it down with threats of fines, or so we heard through the grapevines, saying that they were trying to officially reschedule. And I will just say that I think we have all heard that, you know, with the size those fines would have been, that would have affected college bike team budgets very significantly, to the point that they were kind of scared out of going through with that plan. But university administration is allegedly working on an official reschedule of the races. Not a ton has been, I think, known about that by the greater campus, but that is allegedly going on behind the scenes. If we hear anything, we will be sure to let you know. That's going to do it for our Around the Hedges this week. We are now going to talk about soccer, which is not a sport we have talked a ton about, but we are in the middle of the UEFA Champions League, and the boys have some thoughts.
Yeah, so, man, is it great to be a UCL and just a football fan, Ian. Show some respect. Fan, not soccer fan. But I am joined by a couple of our ball knowers here at Against the Grain, in Max and Andrew, and Brandon will give his input, I guess, on his villains, Aston Villa. But so what we're going to do here is really just go through the first legs of the quarterfinals, which happened in the last couple days, give our thoughts, and then see what each team can look forward to, well, some of them at least, if you're not Borussia Dortmund, towards the rest of the tournament. So I guess let's just get started then. Max and Andrew, let's just talk about the marquee game here, Arsenal-Madrid, with Declan Rice really making his impact on not only the footballing world, but apparently the internet. It's the only thing I've seen on social media like the last few days. So what are our thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I want to give full credit to Arsenal and Mikel Arteta. I haven't been like maybe the biggest fan in the past, but I mean, I think we all have to admit he ran circles around Ancelotti today. I don't know what Real Madrid's lineup was. We can get into that later, but Arteta set out with a really good game plan. They pretty much dominated the game. The second half went really well for them. And obviously when you have Declan Rice, who suddenly discovered how to take free kicks and slam two in top bins, that's really going to help you. And I think honestly, it's going to be tough for Madrid to overcome this, even at the Santiago Bernabeu. But yeah, again, full credit to Arsenal.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of credit that needs to go to Arsenal. I think as a Arsenal hate watcher.
Yeah, we've got a couple of Arsenal hate watchers on this podcast.
Three of them.
I can't even lie. Yeah, it's not great.
I was really looking forward to seeing Madrid's front three really thrive and tear up that Arsenal back line. But I think they've just completely disappointed in that quarterfinal tie and really didn't amount to much at all. And I was specifically disappointed with Vinny, who I guess in my eyes has just been terribly overrated for so long. I think he's the product of being around a bunch of great players. And on the ball, I don't think he's anything special outside of his pace. And Arsenal did a great job limiting that. And then when he didn't have his pace down that line, he really didn't have any extra quality to open up that Arsenal back line.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's this game subverted expectations in just about every way, right? Because even if you saw, you know, Madrid losing coming out of the Emirates, you weren't expecting for it to be a demolition. But I guess some people here, you know, and other people on the internet might have expected that from the lineup Madrid put on here. I mean, Modric, you know, in the midfield at nearly 40 years old, you wonder, what are we doing there? And but yeah, like the front three, like you see that and think they were supposed to, you know, perform, and then they just did not, just completely quiet. And I'm really trying to avoid giving Arsenal credit here. I'm just rambling. No, they should get the credit, because with Gabriel injured in the back, a lot of people thought that putting Kivior in there at center back was really going to compromise them. But I mean, clean sheet. Apparently, Arsenal are unbeaten against Madrid all time, and they haven't conceded a goal against Madrid either, which is a crazy stat line. And I guess history is just like favoring Arsenal in this regard.
Yeah, I definitely think focusing on Madrid's lineup, Ancelotti got it all wrong. As you said, Modric, he's almost 40. I don't know how you can go into this fixture against a team with the midfield and backline like Arsenal. They're known for being probably the most physical team in the world, and you're putting out like an uncle. Like, what are we doing there? That's an awful choice. And then Alaba, who hasn't played left back in like 2 or 3 years, he's coming off an injury, he's not fit, and you're putting up, he's up against Saka. Like, that, what are we doing
here?
Yeah,
that's poor.
It's an awful, awful lineup. And I know, like, hindsight's 20/20, but even before the game, like, that's not the move. And I know they have injuries, but I think they could have done some reshuffling in order to get the right personnel into this match.
100%. So do we, it's the question of the hour, really, because the, you know, everybody keeps on saying Madrid, kings of Europe, kings of Europe. They did it last year and they've done it before. Will they come back? Guys, I'll be honest, and I would love to hate and I would love to see it. My roommate TJ said it's setting up perfectly for the Bottlers to lose 4-0 in Madrid, but I just don't see it. This win gives Arsenal a lot of confidence. That's what Madrid do not have right now. They are not in form. I think this is Arsenal's to take, and they should cruise in Madrid. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they won the game either.
I personally see too much quality in this Madrid 11 to give up hope. And there's just one player. Mbappe is just too good of a big game player for me to completely give up hope. And once again, as an Arsenal hater, there's so much of me that just wants to see Mbappe score like a hat trick and lead Madrid to a 3-0, force extra time, dramatic finish, like
Courtois penalty save.
But
right?
the way Arsenal won that game was just so dominant that it's hard for me to say that I could pick Madrid to even just win the game outright.
Because it's 3-0. It's not even 2-0. Like the Marino goal, like, basically
the dagger. Yeah. I mean, important thing to know is Arsenal have conceded more than 2 goals once in the last year and a half, and it was a fluke game against Luton last year. Like, this team does not get, like,
that's Arteta's
MO. The
they don't concede goals.
So I think Madrid could win their leg at home, but ultimately Arsenal to go through.
All right. Something that we couldn't have seen before. As we move on to the next matchup, somehow, you know, like the smaller matchup between two European titans in Bayern Munich and Inter Milan, some of the casual fans might look at the scoreline seeing that Munich took the loss in Germany, but I have a feeling some of us here are not too entirely surprised by that. Max, tell us why.
It is my view that Inter Milan are the best team in Europe. And I
whoa. I don't know about that.
It starts with their back line. The way they, their composure at the back with and without the ball is something. We talk about Arsenal's great defense. Inter have given up just 2 or 3 goals in the UCL this year. And the way they deal with high press and being put under a lot of pressure with or without the ball is something that's super special. And it starts with a top two center back in the world, Bastoni, who can break the press single-handedly as a center back. And it really wasn't that surprising for me to see Inter hit Bayern on the counter, break their press multiple times, find Lautaro and Thuram, who are a great strike partnership, and really put pressure on this Bayern back line to deal with the counterattacks. Now, I was a little bit worried at the beginning. Inter did not start well. And I am not saying that Inter are going to go through, even though they head back to Milan, because Bayern do have a lot of quality and still were able to create quite a bit of chances, even against this great Inter back line.
Yeah. Andrew, any comments before we look ahead at both of these teams going forward?
Yeah, I think heading back to Milan, obviously Bayern are struggling with the injuries, like Upamecano, Davies, Neuer. Like, they've got
Musiala
this,
didn't play last game.
Yeah,
right?
They have this B-Tech back line, and honestly, like, Thuram and Martinez, maybe not my favorite strikers, but they're a handful for any, like, defense in the world. I think Bayern are going to have big problems in Milan. Then obviously, talking about Milan's quality on the ball, like, Bastoni's going to come in. He's going to break the press. Then you have like Çalhanoğlu sitting a little bit deeper now, facilitating
Barella
the play.
Barella being very physical.
Yeah, Barella like moving the ball forwards. This team is very underrated, a lot of quality. I don't know if I agree with Max that they're the best in Europe, but they're certainly up there.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but I do see lots of problems with Bayern. And just from the get-go, when this tie was drawn, I saw lots of issues for Bayern with the matchup. And I think Inter are the team to knock this supposed giant out, especially because Inzaghi as a manager is just so much more experienced than Kompany. So yeah, I think the three of us probably like to think that Inter will take the tie, and I think they probably win back in Italy next week. Do we think we probably agree with that?
Yeah, I think Inter will be able to get out of this tie with either a win or a draw in a pretty close game. But I think they have stars at every level of the field. Lautaro is one of the best strikers.
It's a good
in
backbone,
the world.
Or it's a good spine for the team.
Barella's a great midfielder, and Bastoni, as I said, is one of the best center backs in the world. So you have that spine plus one of the best coaches in the world. It makes for a good recipe going forward.
Yeah. Speaking of good recipes, all you really need is Lamine Yamal, Rafinha, and Lewandowski, apparently, as Barca thrashed Dortmund 4-0 in Spain. I mean, I can't say I'm entirely surprised, but you can't say you're not impressed, because, man, this team just feels like the most complete it's been in years since Messi left. Rafinha is, like, not renaissance necessarily, but really him taking that responsibility as the captain of this team has really elevated this team. Yamal's emergence, of course. I mean, many people are saying this is the best team in Europe. Fox, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that scores 3 goals a game, maybe over that, to be honest. They've been ripping it up in the Champions League. Rafinha's at, 19 goal contributions in the UCL this season.
Ballon d'Or winner,
like,
I think.
He's on another level. He's finally found the end product that he didn't necessarily have at Leeds or earlier on at Barca. Then obviously Lua, 40 goals this season, like unreal. And then Lamine Yamal, if I wasn't a Liverpool fan and didn't have Salah on my right wing, I'd be calling him the best winger in the world.
Yamal's so
good. And he's 17 years old.
He's younger than everybody at the school, by the way.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, it's literally, you don't want to call him like the next whatever, but in terms of talent comparable to Messi, Neymar, he's up there.
It feels like he's his own thing, which is crazy.
I think that's a great point, is that he's not like this, like you see, like Ansu Fati came up for a little bit. People kind of compared him to Messi. Yamal has a very special ability on the field, that he sees things that just other people don't, and has this ability to play that killer pass. Obviously, you want to, the comparisons are immediately going to go to Messi, but the way he plays is very unique, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that super tight dribbling all the time. It's the ability to burst by you and then also be able to play that killer pass from midfield. And that really scares me going forward for Barca. Obviously, they should go through after winning 4-0. And this front three is something that's really, really special. And I think could do a lot of damage going forward.
100%. And Yamal's fingerprints were all over the game, too. Like, some of his build-up play for Lewa's, I think, second goal was magical. It was making Ray Hudson absolutely crash out like he always does on the commentary. But, I mean, it's players like Pedri and Frenkie de Jong, and then Kubarsi, who we probably don't have enough time to talk about, but he's a stud, the next great center back in the world. And you have some of these veterans like sort of sprinkled in there, like Szczesny and Inigo Martinez, who's starting at center back for Barcelona. It's just such a complete team. And, final thoughts on Yamal. For me, he oddly enough reminds me of like an Iniesta and Neymar like blend, where like he has the Iniesta like passing and vision, but Neymar's technique on the ball, it's like you said, really unique. And I think we don't have to say much. Barca are through to the next round and could be going a lot further than that. Final matchup as we get into it, PSG Villa, who I see Brandon here shaking his head. He is an Aston Villa fan, but let's be real, against, in my opinion, the best team in Europe in PSG. I don't think Villa had much of a chance, though it did look grim at first with Morgan Rodgers giving Villa the 1-0 lead, but Doué, Kvara, and fan favorite Nuno Mendes really set the dagger there at the end. Thoughts on this match, gentlemen?
Honestly, I think if it had been 2-1 going back to Villa Park, like it would have been a lot more, you know, confident, I'd say. But like some of the, you know, decisions I feel like are just like mind boggling. Like, where's Ollie Watkins? Like, why is he not starting? Like, I
get Rashford at the nine started.
I get that he's been hurt, but at the same time, like, you're going against PSG in France. Like, you know, you got to keep it somewhat close. Like, he's our best player. Why is he not playing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they brought him in at what, like, 72nd minute. At that point, you know, you're already down 2-1. And honestly, like, the biggest thing was just the 92nd minute goal. Like, really just like
yeah, that's a killer.
I think that definitely was for, that was like kind of a ceiling moment for PSG. They got what they deserved from that game. But even if we did go, even if we go into this next leg, PSG 2-1, the way they dominated that game to me doesn't give me hope for Villa, whether this is a 2-goal or 1-goal lead. PSG just had so much quality on the ball and were able to pin Villa back pretty consistently for long stretches of the game, which is something you can't afford, as we saw against a front three of Kavara, Dembele, and Doué.
So good, man.
Who can beat you combining together, but also just individually with that individual quality on the ball. It's just something that's super dangerous, and I really don't have much hope for Villa, unfortunately, Brandon.
I think Unai Emery is going to need a masterclass at Villa Park to win this leg for them and put them through. And he's done it before. Like, he's had success with Sevilla, with Villarreal in Europe. He almost got Arsenal to a European trophy. Like, let's not forget, this is a very serious manager. That being said, I think the personnel they have at their disposal, like, at the end of the day, if you have Matty Cash and Ezri Konsa going up against, like, Dembele, Kvaratskhelia, Doué, Gonzalo Ramos,
off the
Barcola,
bench.
Like, it's a long day, bro. It's a mismatch. Mismatch every day of the week. Get
completely.
The ball on the wing, cook them, bro.
And
it's
Luis
over.
Enrique has really figured this team out in a way that, like, last season, you know, everybody who knows me has heard me talk endlessly about how disappointing last year's PSG team was in such a weak tournament where they were up against Dortmund in the semis and it felt like all their players were just flopping, and Mbappe was on that team last year. But this team feels just so complete, and you just don't see the weakness where even with Barcelona and like Arsenal or Madrid, you can point out the weaknesses. I genuinely don't see one with this PSG team. And maybe it's just the fact that I'm a Liverpool fan and they made an impression on me, but I just think this team is unstoppable right now. And yeah, I think they'll take care of business at Villa Park, whether they win or not. I think they'll get the result to move on.
Yeah, and I think looking at PSG in terms of the other teams that we see kind of going through into the semifinal round, I kind of have them in a second tier of teams. I have Inter and Barca at the top of my tiers of who can win it, and then I have PSG and Arsenal. I just think I don't trust PSG's backline and midfield as much as I do Barcelona's and Inter's, and I kind of have that same view of Arsenal as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, any closing thoughts from us before we move on to the next part of the show?
No, I mean, I think, unfortunately, these second legs seem relatively straightforward, aside from maybe Bayern Inter, but it should be a great tournament. A lot of good teams left. It'll be exciting.
Yeah, I am certainly excited, too. As we close off our very first ever football segment, almost went back on my word there, in the history of Against the Grain. But I will now kick it to myself for our announcements and promos for the week. You might have heard this last week, but phone rings, door chimes, in comes Weiss Tabletop Theaters production of Company. Join us April 17th, 18th, and 19th at 8 p.m. in Weiss Commons to watch Rice's rendition of the beloved musical Company with music and lyrics by Stephen Sondheim and book by George Firth. The story follows the lonely bachelor Bobby and his married friends as he reflects on relationships, love, friendship, and what it means to be alive on his 35th birthday. Go to @WeissTabletopTheater on Instagram for more information and fun previews. Tickets are free for Rice students and $5 for general admission. Again, that's April 17th, 18th, 19th at 8 p.m. in Weiss Commons. That's what it's really about. We open 1 week from today. I will be performing in that show, and I know that my fellow showmates will be coming to see it because I will make them see it. As we move on to our promo, while listening to music may be a deeply personal experience, making music has required multiple people for hundreds of years. We'd especially like to highlight the intimate creative mingling that takes place with duos. Come listen to Ernie and Bert every Tuesday at 7 p.m., where we showcase musical duos across K-True's collection. Who does it better than Ernie and Bert? I don't know. Clearly nobody. All right. We move on to our next, to the next part of the show, which I believe is our game, which we've got something a little different here lined up. I will kick it over to Ian to introduce that for us.
Thank you, Julian. Great work as always. And Brandon and I have put together a little ode to the start of baseball season, if you will. You know, we've got our April showers and our May flowers coming, but we've also got baseball season. And a lot of us a lot of America is not right in an MLB market or is not super familiar with all the depths of professional baseball that are played around this great nation. So we are going to do a little real or fake with minor league baseball team names, I think. Isn't that right, Brandon?
That is correct. So basically, in the game, we're going to provide them with two teams, one that's a real minor league team and one that we just, you know, made up. And they're going to have to pick which one is real and which one is fake.
All right. Brandon, I think you should do the honors and announce our first pairing to the staff here.
Okay. So the first team we're going to go with is the Chicago Dogs versus, the Chattanooga Churros.
What?
I think the Churros are real.
I think the Churros got to be real.
The alliteration, it has to be the Churros, I agree.
That's our final answer.
That is incorrect.
Oh, no! Oh!
The Chicago Dogs, I believe, are in the American Association, which is in indie ball, and the Churros Brandon made up about half an hour ago.
Yeah, I knew that one, too. I knew that one, too, man. Come on. Yeah.
All right, next. All right, this one should be a freebie. We're going to see if you guys get it. We're going to go the Omaha Tumbleweeds or the Rocket City Trash Pandas.
I think I've heard of the Trash Pandas.
Me too. So I think they're real.
I think they're the real one.
Do we have to agree on these answers, I guess?
Well, I guess we didn't think about that. Does it have to be unanimous? I think if there's three of you, so if it's a 2-1, we might as well keep it moving.
Yeah, might as well. I'll go with the lads, what they said.
That is correct. The Trash Pandas are real. I believe they're an Angels affiliate. The Omaha Tumbleweeds are not real. We mentioned the Trash Pandas in the meeting when we were planning the segment, so we were going to see if you guys remembered.
I was not paying attention.
Okay. All right, Brandon, let another one fly.
Next, we have the Greensboro Grasshoppers versus the Toledo Tater Tots.
I feel like Tater Tots has to be real. I'm going with Tater Tots.
Wait, I agree, Tater Tots.
I'll agree.
That name is Aura, too, bro.
That is incorrect.
That is incorrect. There is a team called the Toledo Mud Hens, and there's a college team in Minot, North Dakota called the Minot Hot Tots. So, but the Toledo Tater Tots is
do not,
not real.
Exist. Yeah.
Real. Bro, these are so unserious. What are these names?
I know,
all right, next, we've got the Hartford Yard Goats and the Lubbock Lazy Llamas.
Lazy llamas can't be a real
that
thing.
Can't be
but
real.
Yard goats sounds so tough.
Bro, what team is calling their team lazy llamas? Lazy? It has to be
it's
lazy llamas.
Be the yard.
I'm saying lazy llamas is fake.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
I agree. Okay.
Yeah.
Lazy llamas is fake?
Yeah.
That is correct.
There we go. Yeah, bro, you are immediately relegating your team to, like, the abyss if you're calling yourself lazy.
The Hartford Yard Goats, I believe, are the AA affiliate of the Colorado Rockies, which is surprisingly high up there for having a name like Yard Goats. Brandon, what do we got next?
Next, we have Yakima Yodelers versus
who?
The Carolina Disco Turkeys.
What is going on?
Oh my God.
This segment is great. I'm having
Yakima?
A great time.
It's a place.
Where is that? Is that real?
Yakima?
We're not familiar.
I cannot look it up.
Wait,
my
can you say
someone down. Identify yeah, this location?
I'm way too like shook right now. What right. were the names again? Yakima what?
The Yakima Yodelers. The internet is down. I'm trying to get an
versus
answer on where
the
Yakima
Carolina
is.
Carolina Disco Turkeys.
On my life, nah.
I think Disco Turkeys is real.
I genuinely don't
so
know,
unserious.
Bro.
It's too funny not to be real.
How are these teams?
For what it's worth, Yakima is a small town of about, what, like 20, 30,000 people in Washington State.
So to all our listeners in Washington State, sorry about that.
I think the disco turkeys are real.
I agree.
All right, I'll go with that too.
That is correct.
Oh, hey! Bro.
Yakima yodelers.
Where did you, how deep did you have to get into your bag to pull Yakima out of nowhere, bro?
Yeah, all right, we're gonna do a couple more because this is, you know, fun. Why not? All right, let's see. All right, we're gonna go Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp and South Jersey Shore Cats.
I swear I've heard of Jumbo Shrimp.
I think I've heard of Jumbo Shrimp as well.
I was going to say, the second one sounds way too much like a Little League, like YMCA team name, low-key. So I think the first one's real as well, yeah.
That is correct. The Jumbo Shrimp are a triple A team.
We're heating up.
And I think I did. That's the one team I have heard of, actually, I think.
The Shortcats I just made up. All right, yeah. Brandon, what do you got?
The next one we have are the New Mexico Bandits versus Florence Yalls.
Florence Yalls are real.
What?
I think I've heard of that before.
Yalls?
The Yalls. I swear I've heard
the
of
Yalls.
That. Like on Instagram.
I believe
like,
I believe.
I swear I've seen like some reels or something.
We're riding with Andrew, bro. Hey, laser beam pointed at the earth. I want Andrew Fox.
Oh my God. If I'm wrong.
Lakers in five.
That is correct. So you know what? I think the moral of the story is if it sounds too fake, it's probably real.
I guess the squad does not know I interned with the Florence Yalls last summer.
Wow.
I worked there.
Look at that.
All right, do we do one more?
Yeah, one more.
All right, one more. What haven't we done? Oh, we're running out of good ones here. Okay. all right, we're going to go to the Texas Panhandle. We've got the Amarillo Sod Poodles and the Lubbock Lollipops.
What is a sod poodle?
is it a sad poodle?
Like, I don't... What does that mean?
What I feel is
like,
that?
I feel like the lollipops are real.
I was going to say the lollipops are fake.
Nah, I think feel like the lollipops are
But what is a sod
real.
Poodle? I don't know what that means.
That's something they made up.
That is the question. It's not like to be or not like to be. Grass. It's what is a sod poodle?
Oh my!
If we ever have merch for the show, we need to just have like, what is a sod poodle?
Yes,
I'm
yes.
so confused.
Okay, I'm saying lollipops is fake.
I think lollipops is real.
Oh my God, don't make me pay.
Right, laser beam point at the earth. Julian is getting his wish.
Nah, the sod poodle's gotta be real.
So lollipops are fake, then.
Yeah. Sure.
Did you both say lollipops are fake?
I said lollipops are real.
Right, so you think it's lollipops is real? You think
fake.
You think lollipops is you think sod poodles is real.
I think sod poodles is real.
Sod poodles is real.
Yeah, there we go. What even is that?
The sod poodles. I don't know. It's like, yeah. It's like, as in, like, sod like grass and poodle like the dog breed.
That's
like
disgusting.
Two words.
That's a disgusting mascot.
Ah, yes. The water whales.
There you go. Chloe is showing an image right
wheat?
Now. That is the AA affiliate of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Ah, yes. The Skybirds.
And the Lubbock Lollipops. We made that one up.
As we end this, though, shout out the Biloxi Shuckers, who have recently dropped a new logo, which is a little bit questionable. If you haven't seen it, go and look it up. It's pretty funny.
And the great news is we have a nice little stash of real minor league team names that we did not use, so we could run this back. I think this one was pretty fun. And making up team names is also quite fun.
All right,
where are we going next? Are we going to we're going to talk about the NCAA transfer portal. This has been in the headlines recently. We actually have a clip that a Division I basketball coach gave at a I'm getting there. Hold on, Chloe. Gave at a press conference that we're going to play for you in a second, but first we want to quickly recap the impact that the transfer portal has had on college sports. I think, you know, everybody obviously knows that we gotta stop looking at minor league teams. We gotta lock in that there have just been so many transfers and their impact. I think one of the biggest examples is the now defending national champions, the Florida Gators. All the top three of their leading scorers were all mid-major transfers. Walter Clayton from Iona, Elijah Martin played 4 years at FAU and is now a grad student, and Will Richard from Belmont. Do we have anything else we want to say on the impact of transfers real quick before we get into kind of a more specific discussion?
Have we rolled the clip?
Should we roll the clip? I think we should just roll the clip.
Let's roll the clip.
And if they're here, and if they're sophomores, and they have a big year, and a group of five or a power five approach them, and they have the finances to pull them out of there, and I can't match the finances, then you know what? They're gonna go. That's part of it. Coach has been doing it for years, so we shouldn't get mad as coaches when these kids make decisions to take care of their family. Because like I said, I'm gonna say it again. Coach has been doing it for years, but I also think they need to be a buyout. If they move up for me and go to group of five and power five, I should get kind of a compensation for that, you know? So NCAA, if you're listening to me, I need a buyout.
So that was Grambling State head coach Mickey Joseph on players transferring from smaller mid-major schools to power five, big-time schools like Florida, Auburn, as we saw in the tournament. And what he kind of proposes is there's already this – the big schools have more money, so the players are going to eventually be more attracted to that money when they have the when they develop the ability to play for that school. So what he proposes is something like in soccer, where instead of having draft pick trades or player swaps, it's really based on transfer fees. So you pay a certain amount of money, and then you have and then you acquire that player. So what he wants is that these smaller schools will get paid by the bigger schools to then sign their players and allow the players to transfer over. Do we have any initial reactions to this?
I like it. I think Mickey's cooking with this one. I feel like with the state of the transfer portal nowadays, like, it's not sustainable for smaller schools to just be losing all of their good players all the time and receiving nothing in return. And eventually, like, it could potentially lead us to a situation where it's like, pretty much every school that isn't like Power 5 or even some Power 5 schools have to like drop down to like lower conferences, and then we just get one like mega conference with like 25 teams that can like financially support themselves, right? And I don't think anyone really wants to see that. And so I feel like paying, like with the transfer fee, obviously you're giving an NIL package to the player, but then you're also compensating the school for like identifying and developing the talent and giving them the money to like keep doing that. And like I think it's great. It keeps them up and the big schools can afford it. So I don't see why not.
My initial reaction, I think, was similar to Andrew's, was just that, like, if you take a step back and kind of look at this, it's like, man, we're really hanging, like, mid-majors out to dry. Like, if you think about, like the Georgetown, well, I guess Georgetown, not really, but, like, the, like, VCU, sorry, that was a complete misspeak, like, VCU and the Loyola Chicagos that we kind of have known from past March Madnesses, like, something like this would just, like, ruin their chance of being able to perennially, you know, do that and kind of balance out college sports to an extent. And I think that having a buyout like that might be a way to at least partially remedy that, though I do kind of see some flaws as well. I think Max might disagree, though.
Yeah, so I don't like this at all. I think it kind of, like, we want to keep college sports at least a little bit separate from professional sports. And I think going this route is just going to snowball into us basically having this environment we call college sports, but it's really just a subset of pro sports, where we're still going to have the big schools buying the best players from the smaller schools. And it's just going to take away, I think, from some of the aspects of college sports that we value. Like, players shouldn't like have the freedom to transfer where they want. They shouldn't have to rely on the bigger school to buy them. And then I also think that creating this transfer like fee just brings college sports too close to professional sports.
No, I definitely agree with that to a certain degree. My opinion on it is I think there has to be more restrictions on transferring. Like, I don't think you should be able to transfer.
I 100% agree with that.
I don't think you should be able to transfer every year, because like, even if it is becoming like more pro, which is like kind of what it is becoming, like, amateurism in college sports doesn't really exist anymore, sadly. Like, it makes me really sad, but that's honestly the truth of the matter. And at this point, like, you know, it's already been Pandora's box. Like, it's already been opened. So like, at this point, you can't really go back to, like, you know, how it was. But at the same time, like, I think there are other ways that are better to, you know, prevent this. But like, a good example, I feel like, is you look at Rice as a smaller school. Like, you know, we face a lot of these similar issues where players will leave and go to bigger schools. An example of this is one of our players on the basketball team this year, who was one of our best players. I won't name drop, but reportedly, he got offered $500,000 to enter the transfer portal. And originally, he wasn't going to. And then, you know, someone came and offered him $500,000, and he entered the portal. And now he's not coming back to Rice, which is like, what are we supposed to do? Like, how is Rice or like any, you know, lower conference team supposed to like actually develop
like
a
have
program,
a team, yeah,
like a culture, and like actually build to the point where we can be competitive? Because all these players, like historically, that's what's been, you know, the reason that like lower level teams could actually compete is they would have players that would come and play for 3-4 years, and they would have such great chemistry, and like they'd know exactly how they all play and things like that, where now it's like one and done at every single school, no matter what. It's like, it's really, really tough for smaller schools in particular.
I think my opinion on that is we're kind of in an age now, like where for so long it was like rah, 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 player empowerment, whatever, give them money, give them rights, give them everything. But now like it's snowballing. Like, we can't really stop that from happening. So I find it very like hard to see a scenario where we start taking rights away from players and we're like, no, you can't transfer. No, you can't get this much money. And I think it's much more like realistic and feasible, and also like financially beneficial for smaller teams, like to receive money, like in compensation. Cause if like this player was going to transfer from Rice, would you not rather like Rice actually get some benefit from that and is able to like reinvest that into the program, or like use that to recruit new players? I just don't see a world like, where we like stop people from transferring.
I think it's a good point, but I also think at the same time, like, I feel like it should be like, if you're giving all these kids so much money, like there should be something where it's like, okay, you sign a 2-year contract where you cannot transfer for 2 years. Or if we're going to remove like, you know, the ability to transfer 4 times in 4 years, like make it so, okay, you can transfer 2 times. Like, 2 times is still a lot. Like, you should not be going to 5 schools in 5 years. Like, that's insane when you think about
that.
We
shouldn't have like journeymen who are college seniors.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's actually crazy. And then with like all the like rules and people like circumventing, you know, the limits on how long you can play, and with especially now with JUCO not counting towards NIL eligibility, you could have kids that are like what, 24, 25 playing college basketball, which is like insane. That's a grown man. Like, he should not be hooping for
Chad Baker Mazzara.
Chad
this
Baker
is you,
he may be coming back for another year. He would turn 26 in January.
Yeah, that's insane. Like,
I didn't know he was coming back.
That's a grown adult playing against people that are right out of high school. It's like actually insane. It's insane.
On like, his like sixth team. Well, not
no,
Baker
that's,
Mazzara's
that's,
case,
but that's like what
like,
I'm saying. Like,
you could.
My question to you would be, obviously, like, in an ideal world, we could stop players from like moving every year, but since we likely can't, and we are kind of seeing players leaving a lot, how would you propose that smaller teams like in D1 or even lower like can stay afloat financially if all of their best talent is leaving and they're getting literally nothing?
No, well, like, that's why I do agree to a point like about the transfer fee. But I think, like, look, if you're getting recruited to a smaller school, like, make these kids sign contracts where like you have to stay for 2 years. And if not, there is like financial backlash. Like, I think that's the best way to do it.
I was going to say, I would also push back on the idea that like the cat's like completely out of the bag, unlike players transferring all over the place. Cause like the NCAA, I feel like, has showed to us before that they're willing to do what they think is best, even if it upsets literally everyone. And I think they could get a lot of people to like be in favor of this, honestly. I know like it goes a little bit back on the whole player empowerment thing, and I think there would be backlash, but I think a lot of fans and a lot of coaches and honestly some players would probably understand the idea of like limiting transfers to an extent. But what are you saying, Max?
I don't like the idea of creating like a system. Like in soccer, like professional soccer, there are teams that develop players, they invest young, and then sell them for a lot of profit. I don't like that idea in college sports at all. I think that just creates a very clear hierarchy that would, I think, not even do what it's intending, because you just have these schools like these, like a Loyola Chicago, you have them investing in high school talent and then just selling them off to bigger schools, which just defeats the whole purpose of going to college, trying to develop yourself as a player and get to the NBA, which is the ultimate goal, is to make money and get to the NBA. And if you have these smaller schools who their whole goal will just become to invest in players young and then just pawn them off. And that just doesn't seem right in the college sense. Whereas you should leave that to professional sports.
I guess the pushback or the immediate response to that is how is that different than what's already happening?
Well,
they're not getting paid, but you could argue that the low major of Division I basketball has become double A baseball. You can kind of make that case. It's not concrete, but
I think in the long term, it actually would kind of help these, programs be more competitive. Cause you look at going back to soccer, look at Ajax, what they do, it's very similar,
but they've completely fallen out of relevance. They were last relevant when they made that
the
run,
70s or some.
Well, they made the run 6-7 years ago.
Yeah,
they are completely irrelevant. All the relevant teams right now are the ones who have the most money. Newcastle just became more relevant because they just got a bunch of money. You're just gonna, in the long run, you're just gonna have this very clear scale of teams where you have the teams who are good at developing players and profiting off the bigger teams, and then you're gonna have the bigger teams with all the money who are buying this talent.
I think. I see what you're saying, and I see how that would create the hierarchy in the long term. But I guess my concern in the now is we're gonna see the collapse of there's not gonna be a hierarchy in the future because there aren't gonna be any small teams to develop this talent because they're just gonna fade away into they can't afford it. So they're gonna blow up the programs, change divisions or something like that, and we're just only gonna have big teams.
But why won't they be able to afford it? That's where I'm kind of stuck. We've done this without NIL funding and that type of stuff for so long. Why is putting more money into the bigger teams gonna affect the lifetime of the smaller teams?
If they can't afford it, do we care, or is that the intended effect also? If they can't afford it and they stop, that stops players from transferring to an extent, is that a bad thing? I think is another question.
If you want to squeeze small schools out of competing, then that's not really the spirit of college sports, I feel like. The whole thing is so many kids get to play and it's part of competition. But I feel like I don't know. I mean, I just don't think if players are just transferring from small schools and they're not staying there for multiple years to become bigger and develop and bringing them money,
I think the top successful players you see with Florida, they were with their smaller programs for multiple years anyways. You have Walter Clayton spent multiple years at Iona. We said Elijah Martin spent 4 years at FAU. They're by implementing the transfer fee, you're just further incentivizing the bigger teams to just collect and take talent away, and it's just in the long term going to create a this tier of where you have the best teams are the ones with the most money and the worst teams are the ones with the least money, and I just don't agree with that.
That's a great way to wrap it up. Very, very great, interesting segment. I guess we'll see, the way the college landscape unfolds. So with that, we're going to move on to some quick hits. First, I'm going to talk about Ovi, finally passing Gretzky. This was a record that a lot of people a few years ago on most lists that were unbreakable records, no one thought this would ever get touched. And he set it up with 2 goals against the Blackhawks to tie the record in one less game than Gretzky had. And then in that 1,487th game, he broke it against the Islanders on the road. Just truly incredible. Greatest goal scorer of all time. Nothing else needs to be said.
Yeah, and I'll take us to our next quick hit on the Nuggets. By the way, Alex Ovechkin a couple years ago said himself that he didn't think that record was going to be broken. So nice full circle moment there. But as we get to the Nuggets, I'm sure everybody has heard of the Denver Nuggets firing Coach Malone and GM Booth. I wish I could tell you their first names. I am blanking on them right now. But point is, both of them have been fired from their positions right before the NBA playoffs, which let's just say would be more surprising had the Memphis Grizzlies not done the exact same thing a couple weeks ago with their coach. And it puts the Denver Nuggets in a bit of a weird spot where you do have the best player in the league in Nikola Jokic, but with all the, the noise going around on the team, some of their stars not being able to stay healthy, How far can the Nuggets actually go? How far can Jokic actually take them? And better question yet, will Jokic want to stay there long term? Lots of interesting questions for Denver Nuggets and their fans, and honestly, the entire NBA as we look towards the playoffs and next season. Which means that we can finally close off this episode with our predictions. And they're going to look a little bit different just because, you know, there's aside from the NBA, there's not too many interesting matchups going on. But in the spirit of our UCL segment, we do have a special prediction from each member of our team where we get to say who we think our Champions League winner will be when we get to June. I'll kick it off to Brandon first.
Well, for the champion, it's definitely not going to be Inter because they're not even going to win the Serie A. Whole different thing. But I'm going to say Barca.
I'm also going to take Barca. I think there's a couple strong teams in it, but I trust Flickball.
I got to go with my dad's team, Inter Milan. Brandon, it also doesn't matter because the Champions League is completely separate. Ian.
I am going to take Barca. I feel like I was studying up as someone who does not know football quite as well as a lot of members of the staff. And I think one of the most concrete things that you all agreed upon was that Barca is a force to be reckoned with. So I will ride with Barca after listening to the segment.
My one soccer allegiance that I have is to Arsenal. Grew up an Arsenal fan. Watch the EPL, I was an Arsenal fan. But there are too many monsters in the Champions League right now to overcome. I think PSG gets the championship.
That is a wonderful take and even better recovery after that stinker of an Arsenal take. I will agree with Chloe. Y'all heard my thoughts earlier in the episode. I just think this might be PSG's time to do it. All right, next prediction. We get into a big matchup for the NBA Western Conference between the Warriors and the Clippers. Will determine lots of stuff when it comes to seeding. I will go, we'll just do it in the same order as we did before. I don't know what I was going to do. I'll kick it to Brandon first.
Give me the Warriors.
I will take the Warriors too, probably because Kawhi's knee will explode mid-game.
I think the Clippers are poised for a bigger run than people think, so I'm going to take the Clippers.
I 100% agree with Max. I think the Clippers are probably at worst a little bit underrated, if not very underrated, and I would not be surprised if they make some noise here.
A healthy Kawhi we haven't seen in a long time. He looks great. Warriors are at home, and they need this game a lot more. They don't own any of the tiebreakers, and they are going to desperately try to avoid that play-in game. I think they're able to get this one on Sunday.
Compelling take, but I do agree with Max and Ian about the Clippers. I think they are getting hot at the right time. Give me the Clippers in this matchup. And now to a matchup which, to be honest, I do not have a clue about, but we've got a couple of guys boxing. Does anybody have UFC. The pronunciation there? Yeah, UFC. What are the people in this matchup? I don't want to butcher
okay,
that.
All right. We got Diego Lopez versus Alexander Volkanovski. As Chloe has noted here, Diego Lopez is younger. He's taller. Additionally, there has never been a champion under the lightweight division that is over the age of 34, rather. I think my Australian goat, Volkanovski, is somehow going to get it done. Every single thing is telling me Diego Lopez, but give me Volk with a little down under.
Okay, Brandon just said 40 reasons not to pick that guy, and I don't know anything about this thing, so Diego Lopez.
I have to pick Volkanovski here. I can't see him lose again. I just can't watch that. So
it would be too heartbreaking.
I Googled Volkanovski, and the pictures were menacing. So I will ride with Max and Brandon's guy, the Australian bald man, Volkanovski.
We love a short king. But I think Lopez gets it done here.
Australia over Mexico. Give me Volk. And with that said, that closes off our episode for today. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at 8 at ktru.sports on Instagram and at ktrusports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and we don't want you to miss out. If you have a question for the staff, please feel free to DM us on either of those platforms or drop a note to our email, ktrusports@gmail.com. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the air. See y'all next week. The champions.